Chapter 46. House. Apostrophe apostrophe said the old farmer, pleased in spite of himself. Very, apostrophe said Manston. Well, I suppose we had better step along a little quicker, Mr. Springrove. The parson's bell has just begun. Apostrophe apostrophe, number 49, apostrophe he murmured. 4. March the 12th, Edward received Owen's letter in due time, but on account of his daily engagements he could not attend to any request till the clock had struck 5 in the afternoon. Rushing then from his office in Westminster, he called a hansom and proceeded to Hoxton. A few minutes later he knocked at the door of number 41, Charles Square, the old lodging of Mrs. Manston. A tall man who would have looked extremely handsome had he not been clumsily and closely wrapped up in garments that were much too elderly in style for his years, stood at the corner of the quiet square at the same instant, having to alight from a cab that had been driven along Old Street in Edward's rear. He smiled confidently when Springrove knocked. Nobody came to the door. Springrove knocked again. This brought out two people, one at the door he had been knocking upon, the other from the next on the right. Is Mr. Brown at home? Apostrophe apostrophe said Springrove. No, sir. Apostrophe apostrophe, when will he be in? Apostrophe apostrophe, quite uncertain. Apostrophe apostrophe, can you tell me where I may find him? Apostrophe apostrophe, no. Oh, here he is coming, sir. That's Mr. Brown. Apostrophe, Edward looked down the pavement in the direction pointed out by the woman, and saw a man approaching. He proceeded a few steps to meet him. Edward was impatient, and to a certain extent still a countryman, who had not, after the manner of city men, subdued the natural impulse to speak out the ruling thought without preface. He said in a quiet tone to the stranger, one word with you. Do you remember a lady lodger of yours of the name of Mrs. Manston? Apostrophe apostrophe, Mr. Brown half closed his eyes at Springrove, somewhat as if he were looking into a telescope at the wrong end. I have never let lodgings in my life, apostrophe he said, after his survey. Didn't you attend an inquest a year and a half ago, at Carriford? Apostrophe apostrophe, never knew there was such a place in the world, sir, and as to lodgings, I have taken acres first and last during the last 30 years, but I have never let an inch. Apostrophe apostrophe, I suppose there is some mistake, apostrophe Edward murmured, and turned away. He and Mr. Brown were now opposite the door next to the one he had knocked at. The woman who was still standing there had heard the inquiry and the result of it. I expected as the other Mr. Brown, who used to live there, that you want, sir, apostrophe she said. The Mr. Brown that was inquired for the other day? Apostrophe apostrophe, very likely, that is the man, apostrophe said Edward, his interest reawakening. He couldn't make a do of lodging letting here, and at last he went to Cornwall, where he came from, and where his brother still lived, who had often asked him to come home again. But there was little luck in the change, for after London they say he couldn't stand the rainy west winds they get there, and he died in the December following. Will you step into the passage? Apostrophe, that's unfortunate, apostrophe said Edward, going in. But perhaps you remember a Mrs. Manston living next door to you? Apostrophe apostrophe, oh yes, apostrophe said the landlady, closing the door. The lady who was supposed to have met with such a horrible fate, and was alive all the time. I saw her the other day. Apostrophe, since the fire at Carriford? Apostrophe apostrophe, yes. Her husband came to ask if Mr. Brown was still living here just as you might. He seemed anxious about it. And then one evening, a week or fortnight afterwards, when he came again to make further inquiries, she was with him. But I did not speak to her. She stood back, as if she were shy. I was interested, however, for old Mr. Brown had told me all about her when he came back from the inquest. Apostrophe apostrophe, did you know Mrs. Manston before she called the other day? Apostrophe apostrophe, no. You see, she was only Mr. Brown's lodger for 2 or 3 weeks, and I didn't know she was living there till she was near upon leaving again. We don't notice next door people much here in London. I much regretted I had not known her when I heard what had happened. It led me and Mr. Brown to talk about her a great deal afterwards. I little thought I should see her alive after all. And when do you say they came here together? I don't exactly remember the day, though I remember a very beautiful dream I had that same night. I shall never forget it. Shoals of lodgers coming along the square with angels' wings, and bright golden sovereigns in their hands wanting apartments at West End prices. They would not give any less. No, not if you yes. Did Mrs. Manston leave anything, such as papers, when she left these lodgings originally? Said Edward, though his heart sank as he asked. He felt that he was outwitted. Manston and his wife had been there before him, clearing the ground of all traces. I have always said, replied the woman, considering I could say no more, if put upon my oath, as I expected to be. But speaking in a common everyday way now the occurrence is past, I believe a few things of some kind, though I doubt, if they were papers, were left in a workbox as he had, because she talked about it to Mr. Brown, and was rather angry at what occurred. You see, she had a temper by all account, and so I didn't like to remind the lady of this workbox, when she came the other day with her husband. And about the workbox? Well, from what was casually dropped, I think Mrs. Manston had a few articles of furniture she didn't want, and when she was leaving they were put in a sale just by. Amongst her things were two workboxes very much alike. One of these she intended to sell, the other she didn't, and Mr. Brown, who collected the things together, took the wrong one to the sale. What was in it? Nothing in particular, or of any value some accounts, and her usual sewing materials I think nothing more. She didn't take much trouble to get it back. She said the bills were worth nothing to her or anybody else, but that she should have liked to keep the box, because her husband gave it her when they were first married, and if he found as he had parted with it, he would be vexed. Did Mrs. Manston, when she called recently with her husband, allude to this, or inquire for it, or did Mr. Manston? No, and I rather wondered at it. But she seemed to have forgotten it indeed. She didn't make any inquiry at all, only standing behind him, listening to his, and he probably had never been told anything about it. Whose sale were these articles of hers taken to? Who was the auctioneer? Mr. Halway. His place is the third turning from the end of that street you see there. Anybody will tell you the shop his name is written up. Edward went off to follow up his clue with a promptness which was dictated more by a dogged will to do his utmost than by a hope of doing much. When he was out of sight, the tall and cloaked man, who had watched him, came up to the woman's door, with an appearance of being in breathless haste. Has a gentleman been here inquiring about Mrs. Manston? Yes. He's just gone. Dear me. I want him. He's gone to Mr. Halway's. I think I can give him some information upon the subject. Does he pay pretty liberally? He gave me half a crown. That scale will do. I'm a poor man, and we'll see what my little contribution to his knowledge will fetch. But, by the way, perhaps you told him all I know where she lived, before coming to live here? I didn't know where she lived before coming here. Oh no, I only said what Mr. Brown had told me. He seemed a nice, gentle young man, or I shouldn't have been so open as I was. Apostrophe, apostrophe, I shall now about catch him at Mr. Halway's, apostrophe, said the man, and went away as hastily as he had come. Edward in the meantime had reached the auction room. He found some difficulty, on account of the inertness of those whose only inducement to an action is a mere wish from another, in getting the information he stood in need of, but it was at last accorded him. The auctioneer's book gave the name of Mrs. Higgins, 3 Canley Passage, as the purchaser of the lot which had included Mrs. Manston's workbox. Thither Edward went, followed by the man. 4 bell pulls, one above the other like waistcoat buttons, appeared on the doorpost. Edward seized the first he came to. Who did you want? Apostrophe, apostrophe, said a thin voice from somewhere. Edward looked above and around him. Nobody was visible. Who did you want? Apostrophe, apostrophe, said the thin voice again. He found now that the sound proceeded from below the grating covering the basement window. He dropped his glance through the bars, and saw a child's white face. Who did you want? Apostrophe, apostrophe, said the voice the third time, with precisely the same languid inflection. Apostrophe, Mrs. Higgins, apostrophe, said Edward. Third bell up, apostrophe, said the face, and disappeared. He pulled the third bell from the bottom, and was admitted by another child, the daughter of the woman he was in search of. He gave the little thing sixpence, and asked for her mama. The child led him upstairs. Mrs. Higgins was the wife of a carpenter who, from want of employment one winter, had decided to marry. Afterwards they both took to drink, and sank into desperate circumstances. A few chairs and a table were the chief articles of furniture in the third floor back room which they occupied. A roll of baby linen lay on the floor, beside it a pap-clogged spoon, and an overturned tin pap cup. Against the wall a Dutch clock was fixed out of level, and ticked wildly in longs and shorts, its entrails hanging down beneath its white face and wiry hands, like the feces of a harpy. Fidissim of Ventris Proliavis, Unkecmanus, A Politis Emperora, a baby was crying against every chair leg, the whole family of 6 or 7 being small enough to be covered by a washing tub. Mrs. Higgins sat helpless, clothed in a dress which had hooks and eyes in plenty, but never one opposite the other, thereby rendering the dress almost useless as a screen to the bosom. No workbox was visible anywhere. It was a depressing picture of married life among the very poor of a city. Only for one short hour in the whole 24 did husband and wife taste genuine happiness. It was in the evening, when, after the sale of some necessary article of furniture, they were under the influence of a quartern of gin. Of all the ingenious and cruel satires that from the beginning till now have been stuck like knives into womankind, surely there is not one so lacerating to them, and to us who love them, as the trite old fact that the most wretched of men can, in the twinkling of an eye, find a wife ready to be more wretched still for the sake of his company. Edward hastened to dispatch his errand. Mrs. Higgins had lately pawned the workbox with other useless articles of lumber, she said. Edward bought the duplicate of her, and went downstairs to the pawnbroker's. In the back division of a moldy shop, amid the heterogeneous collection of articles, and odors invariably crowding such places, he produced his ticket, and with a sense of satisfaction out of all proportion to the probable worth of his acquisition, took the box, and carried it off under his arm. He attempted to lift the cover as he walked, but found it locked. It was dusk when Springrove reached his lodging. Entering his small sitting room, the front apartment on the ground floor, he struck a light, and proceeded to learn if any scrap or mark within or upon his purchase rendered it of moment to the business in hand. Breaking open the cover with a small chisel, and lifting the tray, he glanced eagerly beneath, and found nothing. He next discovered that a pocket or portfolio was formed on the underside of the cover. This he unfastened, and slipping his hand within, found that it really contained some substance. First he pulled out about a dozen tangled silk and cotton threads. Under them were a short household account, a dry moss rosebud, and an old pair of Cartavisite photographs. One of these was a likeness of Mrs. Manston Eunice being written under it in ink, the other of Manston himself. He sat down dispirited. This was all the fruit of his task, not a single letter, date, or address of any kind to help him, and was it likely there would be? However, thinking he would send the fragments, such as they were, to Gray, in order to satisfy him that he had done his best so far, he scribbled a line, and put all except the silk and cotton into an envelope. Looking at his watch, he found it was then 7:20. By affixing an extra stamp, he would be enabled to dispatch them by that evening's post. He hastily directed the packet, and ran with it at once to the post office at Charing Cross. On his return, he took up the workbox again, to examine it more leisurely. He then found there was also a small cavity in the tray under the pincushion, which was movable by a bit of ribbon. Lifting this, he uncovered a flattened sprig of myrtle, and a small scrap of crumpled paper. The paper contained a verse or two in a man's handwriting. He recognized it as Manston's, having seen notes and Gutenberg edition. End of chapter.